and Naima Javani, child development psychologist based at the Human Relations Institute. She's here to help you this morning if you are facing some challenges in your home life with your children, or indeed as your role as a parent. And yeah, we've got lots of messages coming in. One here regarding a teenage daughter who's rebellious. So we'll get to that in a second. We'll also come back on the one regarding nursery in September. And of course, for many of you, your children will be returning in September to a new class or even a new school. And as Naima and I move through the A to Z of child development, we are at W and the well-adjusted child. So there's going to be some adjustments needing to be made for children come September. Okay, so let's get to this text message here. My child is changing classes in nursery in September. She'll be with new children and new teachers. I'm concerned that she will not settle. Should I be worried? She'll be 3 in December.
So thank you so much for that text. And, you know, little three-year-old, it is really difficult. And you have absolutely every right to be worried. It's perfectly normal and perfectly normal for your child to be anxious at the same time. One of the best things that you can do for your child is prepare them. Let them know what to expect. A lot of the times when they know, you know, what their teacher's going to look like, what their classroom's going to look like, the host of different activities that they're going to be engaging in, when they know what to expect, it just makes this transition so much easier. So visit the classroom ahead of time, you know, go in one day, give them a little orientation. A not very nice thing to do is sort of to try and resist the urge to say, it's going to be the most fun you've ever had, or there's nothing to be afraid of, because that's really belittling them and sort of undermining their sense of confidence with the whole area. Other ideas are to read storybooks. So you could actually make your own picture book with your child, you know, picture of your child walking into the nursery, a picture of the child in that classroom, picture of the child with the teacher. And the idea is, if you read this to them every night, again, they have a sense of what to expect.
Yeah, and it then becomes a familiarity.
Absolutely.
It's not so, oh my goodness, suddenly, you know, you told me 3 days ago and now we're arriving at this new place. But that's a lovely idea. Yeah. And that's, again, a nice thing to do together.
Yeah.
Create your own storybook.
And I've actually suggested this to parents and they've used it and successfully gone through assessments, because that's one of the biggest things that schools assess little children on is how can they engage in their environment as soon as their parents have dropped them off, and whether or not they can self-regulate determines whether or not they get into that school, because how else do you test a three-year-old? Parents that have gone out and used this sort of picture book approach easily got in. And so it really does work wonders. Another thing is sort of coming up with a goodbye ritual. So a high five all the time, or a particular phrase, you know, I'm going to see you soon. This is what we're going to look forward to. So again, the child has something to look forward to keep them going through the day.
Something so
to
that
expect.
Signature saying between the two of you.
Signature
and
saying.
And that kind of adds to the trust, doesn't it?
Mom's going to be there. Yeah. Dad's going to be there to pick me up.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
You know, I have sort of that's the expectation. Other things to sort of keep in mind is, can you perhaps arrange play dates or some kind of social interaction with their 2B classmates? It's wonderful, you know, again, just so that they have a couple of familiar faces to come into when they're on their first day is a good way of starting off. But the more anxious you are, your child reads into that, you know. So it's about also being calm. Instead of being very stressed out, you know, trying to get your foot out the door on that first day, the calmer you are, allow for more time, allow for more transition time between getting ready, you know, allow for, Mom, I don't want to go, please don't make me go. And as long as you allow for that and account for it, it just becomes so much easier.
Yes, because I suppose so often in these situations, you have an anxiety as the parent, and it's about saying this is, it is about me in my own personal way, but it isn't about me, it's about the child. So you know, you have to kind of monitor your own anxiety and how much you are kind of putting that anxiety onto your child. It may even be that they weren't going to be anxious
and you've just projected your anxiety onto them.
I mean that idea of you're going to the big school, you're going, which is lovely in the sense that you're getting older and it's a really good thing, because now you're going to be a big girl or a big boy because you're going to the big school. But it can also be like, but I like the little school.
Yeah,
I was quite happy at the little school. Why'd I have to go to the big school?
Absolutely. And children are so perceptive, you know, whether it's your body language or your nonverbal, communicative skills, they absolutely pick up on that. So it's so much more important that you monitor your reaction versus trying to expect what's going to happen for them.
Text message here. I'm struggling with a very rebellious teenage girl. I'm a single mom and we're constantly at war. She has no interest in studying. being only friends and BBMing, I see this great child wasting herself. She won't even keep dental appointments. I'm exhausted. Please help. She won't see anyone as she says she's fine.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're going through, just as a parent in general, you know, is very, very normal with a rebellious teenager. That's not to say that we can put past that and just say, well, you know what, that's the way it's going to be. What do we do as parents? Set boundaries is very, very important. The child still has to be able to know, you know, you are the authority figure. You're the person that's going to decide how much time she gets to hang out with her friends. And that may mean you need to fill up that extra time where she's not hanging out with her friends with constructive activities that both of you do together. So she doesn't really feel like she's not getting to do something fun. At the same time, she's still able to do something fun, but just with her mother. You know, going back to sort of trying to spend quality time that the child wants to, wants to spend time in. And the child has to choose, okay, mom, I'd love to be able to go to the movies with you today, is a wonderful way of setting it up, as opposed to what do you want to do for our activity today, and force it down them. Another sort of aspect is, you know, incentivizing them. So if you are able to do just half an hour of work, you're able to sit on the phone for another half an hour, especially over summer. You have to allow for sort of larger time brackets of leisure time. If you're able to, you know, complete X amount of homework, you get X amount of credit to fill into your phone to be on your BBM, right? It's sort of this give and take to a certain extent, because that's pretty much all they understand at this point. What are you going to give me if I correct my behavior? Because they're now rationally able to think as adults. But boundary setting is so much more important.
If, I mean, I say this tentatively, is it too late? As in, if you're into your teenage years, you've already learnt that behavior and you are kicking back. And remember, we'll come on to single parenting in a moment, but it doesn't have to be to do with being a single parent. Teenagers are hormonally going through changes, making adjustments. And this is where we talked about terrible twos earlier. Teenage years, you're going to see these change in temperaments, change in their bodies, and they're reacting. And as you said, they are now, they can think and feel, and they can negotiate, and they can maybe even rationalize as well. So they're starting to express themselves in the big wide world, and you're part of that challenge, if you like. So if you're into the teenage years and you're now seeing this kind of rebellion, this war, this complete, you know, loggerheads, locked antlers with your teenager, how can you kind of recover from that? Or have you got to just ride it out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Writing it out is an option at the same time, because the last thing you want to do, Suzanne, is get the parent to sort of sabotage everything that they've built for so many years.
She was such a lovely little girl, such a lovely boy. He was so easy when he was a little boy. Now look at him as a 14-year-old.
Yeah, rebellious child. The idea is, if you maintain, and I know this is really, really difficult, you know, it's almost asking for too much, but if you maintain that sense of calm, that child or that now teenager will model that sense of calm. If you're able to problem solve and take them through the problem solving steps so that they can see what this rationale looks like, they're able to then pick it up for you. One of my philosophy is, as long as they're still under your roof, it's never too late. As soon as they move out, you got, you know, a few problems there. It's a little bit difficult to control their behavior. But by and large, you know, 19, 20, they're still considered. They're financially dependent, emotionally dependent on their parents. So yes, you still have a legitimate sort of opportunity to discipline and set boundaries for them.
So interesting article here regarding the well-adjusted child when it comes to single parents. And, you know, can you raise a well-adjusted child if you're a single parent? And it's interesting, you know, even with our previous text there, the person said, I'm a single parent. So it came into context for them. They're obviously thinking there could be a link to the fact that I'm a single parent, but also the fact that you're doing everything on your own. Maybe, I don't know where the ex-husband is, where the father is of the child. But when we're looking at single parenting and the children, what are the challenges, and how, and what are the pitfalls? And is it always the case that as a single parent, you're more likely to have a maladjusted child?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the way sort of the media portrays it, and I sort of emphasize this aspect of the media as well as statistics, say that children with single parents tend to have larger social issues or anger problems, more likely to, you know, engage in deviant activities. But there are statistics that go the complete opposite direction. And And it's important for that balance to be kept in mind. One of the biggest things, sort of one of the biggest advantages of single parents is they can parent the way in which they want to without having this other spouse that has a completely different parenting
style.
Right, yeah. You know, it's just the way in which they want and they think is best for their child. One of the most important components, especially when it comes to single parents, is spend quality time with your children. And that's sort of easier to do when it's just two people schedules versus three people schedules.
Right, yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things that goes out the window when you have sort of that nuclear family. You know, the mom says, well, dad's going to spend time. Dad says, well, mom's spending enough time. It's actually not a one or the other approach. It has to kind of be both of you spending quality time with your child that your child wants to engage in. And that's sort of what I touched upon before as well.
Yeah.
That's the best way to restore a relationship, any relationship. The first advice I give to parents is go back to spending time reconnecting with your child in ways that they want to.
So if you're getting into conflict, actually, you know what? Down tools, and let's get in the car, let's go to the mall, let's go and get some ice cream, let's go to a movie, let's go to the park, whatever it is, but let's take ourselves out of this conflicting situation and let's just calm it down and just relax a little bit.
Absolutely.
Diffuse.
No. Family meals are a wonderful way to just, you know, even if it's just the two of you, family meals are a wonderful way of restoring that connection, making it a religious, regular occurrence. 3 to 4 family meals have to be eaten during the week with both of us together. And this is then catch-up time, you know. And the idea is once you're engaged in that special time, it's only at that time that they're going to be able to tell you exactly what happened to them in their day, you know, who was bugging them, what happened, what they're struggling with. They're not going to sit and open up and have a dear diary moment when you're doing it during an activity of your choice versus the child's choice.
I suppose what might be the case, and it just depends on the circumstances, if you are a single parent, is if you feel that you're carrying the load financially, you know, depending, as I said, on the situation, circumstance, then maybe, and you don't have a partner, immediate partner, to share and offload to, it could be that the child becomes that anchor. You start to kind of load onto the child. If you've got anxiety, if you've got worries, if you're stressed, if you're losing, you know, if you've got frustrations, and the child is venting on the child.
Yeah, that's one of the worst things, and you absolutely sort of tapped it on the head. The child is just a child. They're not an adult. They don't have the cognitive maturity, the emotional maturity to handle the baggage you're about to offload onto them. And if you can at least keep that in mind, again, it will sort of bring back this balance of parent-child relationship versus two adults, which it isn't yet.